Hi, everybody. This is Steve Savitsky, and today we have a special guest from Kashrus, Rabbi Nachum Rabinowitz, who's one of the rabbinic coordinators at the Orthodox Union. And welcome to the program. How are you?
Thank you very much. It's great to be here and see another segment of this beautiful program that informs, educates, and entertains.
Absolutely. Educates and entertains. I like that. That sounds pretty good. I know we entertain. Hopefully we educate. I'm not sure about it. I hope so. But before we even start to talk about the topic, Rabbi Rabinowitz, maybe you could just tell everybody a little bit about what you do at the OU, because I don't think people understand the structure and how complicated it is, and because we have so many products to supervise.
Well, I've been at the OU for about 22, 23 years. And we are working on the administrative side. Of course, we have many rabbis, mashgichim, who are out in the field crossing all the plants and production sites that the OU certifies, thousands all over the world. But we have, of course, the headquarters here in New York, where we have over 50 rabbis who administer all of the activities, receive reports, send assignments, deal with companies, do ingredient approvals, product approvals. So it's a major undertaking to certify the over 8,000 plants that the OU does certify globally in 75 countries.
So which area is yours that you're responsible for?
I deal with many different areas. I don't have a specialty. If I would say one specialty that I have, it's maybe wine and grape juice. That's an area that I've dealt with. I deal also a lot with Pesach, which is why I'm here today. And I've been the editor of the OU's Passover directory for the last number of years. So I think that gives me a certain perspective on Pesach products. And I understand you want to talk about specifically Gebrucht.
Well, we do, because what happens is that in the spring edition of the Jewish Action, which will come out somewhere, around the Pesach season, we're going to be talking, and there's an article about Gebrucht and what it's all about. And it's certainly one of those things that I think are very misunderstood. Nobody really understands it. So let's talk a little bit about what is it and how did it come about?
Gebrucht, what does the word mean? It's a Yiddish
term. That's a good question. What does the word actually mean?
Okay. Gebrucht is a term which means broken. Essentially, it's matzah, which has been broken down and is then used as an ingredient in products further. And this is something something which is recorded in the time of the Rishonim, so it goes back many hundreds of years. There were some who did not take broken matzah or matzah meal, as we come to refer to it, and did not use that with water or with other liquids in cooking. And the reason for this was primarily that, number one, if you were to use flour, even though it's flour which is derived from matzah, people would mistake that for regular flour. And of course, regular flour can't be used on Pesach in products, because that would become chametz. Another reason, and maybe a more known reason, is that there's a concern, even though you've taken the special Pesach flour and you've baked it into matzah, perhaps in the kneading process, not all of the flour has become well kneaded with the water. So what you have essentially is a dough, but you may have specks, small pieces of unkneaded dough or unkneaded flour. And that unkneaded flour did not therefore become matzah. And if it will be subject later to liquids, would then begin the chametz process. So that's I think that the reason for
that, even though the matzah itself is okay, but now there's a problem or a question that if it's now mixed with water, it might turn into chametz.
Precisely.
Okay, so we don't have to worry about the matzah. We're not, the box of matzah that has the OU, it's okay, not a problem, right?
Correct.
But mixing it with water may become a problem. And so when did all this start? I mean, is this something that we have? I mean, you mentioned that this is talked about. I mean, I guess the Shulchan Aruch, more or less, does the Shulchan Aruch hold that this could turn into chametz, or does the Shulchan Aruch really basically say, once it's already baked and it's matzah, then that's it, it can't turn into chametz anymore?
Right. The Shulchan Aruch and the The weight of the poskim is that this is not a concern. And the reason is that in spite of the fact that there may be specks of flour which have not been kneaded properly, the fact that it went through an oven, the baking process being subject to the fire, that itself will render it to a situation where it can't become chametz anymore. And that's the poskim primarily agree with that. And I would add that even those who are machmer, if you'll call it the word machmer, and avoid gebrachts on Pesach, are not doing so because they believe that's the halacha requires it. They're doing it because of traditional minhagim and special stringencies of Pesach.
I see. Now, are there certain groups that are more prone to do this than others? Or, I mean, like the Sfardim. I mean, do they hold from gebrachts at all?
I'm not aware that groups of Sfardim, maybe individuals, but that, large communities of Sfardim would avoid gebrachts. I'm not aware of that. I think that the association has been primarily with Hasidim. And Hasidim have adopted this and maintained this. And the reason I suspect for that is, and I'd like to just maybe back up a little bit. Hasidim, there's, I think, a misconception. Classical Hasidus was not prone to chumrus, not prone to adopting stringencies for the sake of stringencies. And therefore, normally speaking, Hasidim are not, necessarily those who would be machmer. They look to the pnimios, to the inner meaning of mitzvos, and perhaps the Kabbalistic underlying rationale for doing mitzvos, and they look to be mahadir to beautify mitzvos as opposed to just adopting stringencies. Pesach is unique because Pesach, we have this concept of chametz b'mashehu. That means, although that, normally other types of forbidden foods are subject to nullification in small amounts, in the case of chametz, it's not that. Chametz, even in the smallest, the most minute amount of chametz, does not become nullified. And on that basis, the Arizal suggested that if someone were to avoid even the smallest, most minute amount of chametz on Pesach, he has special skulas that would apply to him. Such a person, the Arizal said, would not come to sin throughout the year. And because of this, Hasidim, grabbed onto this Chumrah, but specifically on Pesach. And it's not really just exclusively to Hasidim. You find many minhagim, many stringencies surrounding Pesach because people, treat Pesach with a special status. And understanding that, Hasidim have grabbed this gebrachts, and it's become very widespread amongst Hasidim to avoid gebrachts for that reason.
Mm-hmm. But now, I know that I've seen people who don't eat gebrachs, but somehow on the last day of Pesach, they dafka do eat gebrachs. I don't understand that. What's the rationale behind that?
Well, that's actually, it's an interesting thing. It's, I think, a very beautiful thing. The rationale for that is understanding and recognizing that this is just a chumrah. Hasidim have said, and this I've heard from, many rebbes have said this, that we are adopting a stringency, but we're not trying to demonstrate our separation from those members of Klal Yisrael who do not adopt this stringency. We want to show that it's only a stringency, and therefore we want to show a unification. We want to be unified with the rest of Klal Yisrael and not to separate ourselves from them, and therefore we're going to avoid this stringency on the last day of Pesach, which is only, of course, a derabbanan, the last day of Yontif in Chutz La'aretz, outside of Israel, is only the Rabban. In Israel, of course, they don't have the last day of Yontif at all. So because of that, they want to demonstrate a unification with the rest of Klal Yisrael. And that's important, especially when we're adopting chumras, they shouldn't be used as a vehicle to separate from Klal Yisrael. It should be understood in its context. And when there's opportunity, we want to show that we're together with everybody else.
I see. Okay. But now you look around at, like the advertisements for the hotels, and, we know hotels proliferate on Pesach. By and large, you're finding more and more hotels that advertise non-gebrachs. And if it's really kind of a minhag that really just Hasidim have, I'm not saying that, they're not Hasidim Goeta hotels, but most of the hotels that I've been to don't have that many Hasidim Goeta hotels. So why advertise it? How did this thing take off? Like, all of a sudden, if you want to show you're a little bit more from, then you're all of a sudden non-gebrucks.
Well, I think it's really the market factors that the hotels are trying to cater to. What's happening is there are many people who come from Hasidic families, Hasidic backgrounds, have certain customs, minhagim, of Hasidim, and they maintain those. And even, if they don't dress necessarily in the garb like many Hasidic groups do, they still maintain many of the customs of Hasidim. So you have many people who outwardly may not appear like groups of Hasidim, nonetheless adhere to these minhagim, and the hotels are trying to cater to those. And
so we have closet Hasidim, okay? Murano Hasidim,
right?
Disguised as other than Hasidim. Okay, interesting. Okay, now it's interesting to me because you see more and more hotels, do that. So now, what does it really mean? So if you're a hotel and you're a non-gebruchst hotel, so what can you do or not do? And is the food taste totally different, or are there things you won't serve? How does that work?
Essentially, when they prepare their recipes and their menus, they have to avoid things like matzo ball. They have to avoid the cakes and baked products or kugels that would have matzo meal as an ingredient. And this is primarily, replaced with things like potato starch and other similar tapioca starch. Sometimes has become popular today. And these are—I don't know if it, there's a major difference in taste. Some say yes, and some say no. But it's really not just in hotels. If you'll notice, baked goods that are available for Pesach all over, less and less is available today, baked with matzah meal. And you're finding some of the major Pesach brands that many years ago did prepare matzah meal-based cakes are today not preparing that. And just as an important note, whether you keep gebruchs or you don't keep gebruchs, you can't make a mezonos on a cake if it doesn't have matzah meal in it. You'd make a shahakol on such a cake.
Right.
So it's really, I think the market factors are being considered. And when you design a product, whether it's a hotel service or whether it's a prepared food, you want to, make it available to as large an audience as possible. And if you can make it without detracting from the taste too much in a way that more customers will be able to consume it, that's what you do.
So really what's happening is that instead of baking, let's say, with the matzo meal, which everyone used to do, they now do it with potato starch. And that has replaced the matzo meal today in the ingredients, right? I mean, more or less.
More or less, yeah.
Okay, that's interesting.
And I'm told that they make some pretty good cakes with the potato starch.
No, I don't know, I haven't tasted it necessarily, but I heard also that some of the hotels, some of the more beautiful hotels, and the very expensive hotels, don't have gebruchs, so it's an interesting thing.
But what you're finding today is that many, let's say take gefilte fish. You have many gefilte fish products that year-round, not for Pesach, are made with matzah meal, remove the matzah meal for their Pesach product. Ironically.
Wow.
Because they're trying to cater to that audience, that those extra customers that would only buy it if it doesn't have the matzah meal.
So it's really, it's more of a minhag, less than a real halacha per se. It's a chumrah to make sure that you're not going to have, and I understand that it came about, I was reading a little bit about it, that I guess at one period of time when they were baking matzah, people felt these people weren't all that careful, and they felt that not everything was cooked, and so therefore some of the, I know the Chabad Hasidim, I guess they certainly don't eat gebruchs, right?
Right. In fact, in terms of a more recent, if you will, relatively recent,
sure.
The Baal HaTanya, who was the founder of Chabad Hasidus, wrote the Shulchan Aruch HaRav. And in the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, he has a discussion about this, and he clearly says this is not a din, it's not a halachic requirement, but he said that there is a basis for it, and he says that many are machmer, and he adopts that position that it's a laudable thing for a person to be machmer, and he does actually mention the fact that Hasidim do not keep this minnag on the last Achron Shel Pesach, the last day of Pesach.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the really? Source. Okay. That's a written source
really
for this.
It's not so much just that you Achron Shel Pesach you go out of your way to eat kibbutz.
Right, because I've heard the rationale is this beautiful concept
which
of
which is very nice,
right?
Which is very nice, and there certainly are more products, and there are also even people now who are. I read about one of the Hasidic cookbooks, Tamar Anch, and she wrote two books, which basically has more than 300 non-gebrux recipes,
right?
And even some kneedlach.
Right.
that you could now make from I'm not sure what, I'm afraid to ask, but there's even kneedlach. So it's really interesting thing.
Right. This goes beyond even the kosher market specifically. There's a whole gluten-free industry today. And
right,
many products are prepared gluten-free. And of course, a matzah meal product would not be gluten-free, but many of these non-gebrux products are, in fact, gluten-free.
Ah, gotcha. So, okay, so if you have to eat a gluten-free diet, you could buy a non-gebrux delicious cake, and you don't have to worry about it.
That's right. And some people hoard, in fact, some of the Pesach products, then they hold them year-round. I think there's even a store in New York that keeps the Pesach products year-round for the gluten-free audience.
Really? And could they stay that long, or the taste is the same regardless?
Well, many products have a long shelf life. So I don't think they're selling a product which is beyond its fresh life.
Right. No, I remember one time going to Atlanta and being in the Coca-Cola factory. You know, they have this museum, Coca-Cola. And so the guy who was there giving the tour, swimming with the yarmulke, said to me, "Oh," he says, I wait all year for that Coca-Cola that they put out with that yellow cap, because that's real Coke. You know?
Right.
The other stuff is really not good. I said, "Where do you get it?" He says, "I know, I go to the Jewish areas," he said, "and I always buy a few cases, and we keep them for a long time afterwards. They don't sell them all over." So that's interesting. The gluten-free is a big, big market today, very big market, and that's great. That's a great thing that we can be of service to them. So Pesach is the season, and you do a lot of work with Pesach. I understand that when I look at like Kosher Fest and places like that, they say that a very large percentage of kosher products are bought for Pesach. What is the number? Do you know?
I don't have a figure. I'm not a marketing expert, but
it's a lot. I was very surprised to hear that a large percentage of all the kosher sales for the year are around the Pesach holiday, because I think more people, try to observe it and keep it, which is interesting. Well, listen, Aravinowitz, you've enlightened us. You've given us some idea of Gebrux and what's going on in the Passover world. Anything new for this year, by the way, people should know about? One last thing.
I should have prepared, but I'm not aware off the top of my head of a new product specifically.
No super new product. Okay. No. Well, listen, thank you so much. I appreciate everything you do for us at the Orthodox Union.
Thank you very much. I think our
listeners are going to be more educated about Gebrux. Thanks. Have a great day. Okay.
Thank you. Likewise.
Bye-bye.